Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, Tenderfoot listeners, Dennis Cooper here. If you're a fan of Culpable, then you know we normally focus on one case for an entire season, like the season one case of Christian Andreacchio and the season two case of Brittany Stikes. As I continue working on season three, I'll be using this platform to help more families in their fight for justice. Last fall, I brought you six cases over 6 weeks. Now, I'm bringing you five more. From Tenderfoot TV, another installment of Culpable Case Review is available now. Check out this clip.
So she jumped over her friend into the driver's seat, hit the gas. Her foot did not let off the gas. She hit a mailbox. I think she rolled into a tree, and she was already dead.
From Tenderfoot TV, Culpable Case Review is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts or subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus for early access and ad-free listening. Learn more at tenderfootplus.com.
Rattled and Shook is released weekly, every Thursday, and brought to you absolutely free. But if you want to listen ad-free, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get exclusive bonus episodes. For more information, check out the show notes. Now, enjoy the episode.
And now, presenting Rattled and Shook.
Hi, I'm April.
And I'm Meredith. And this is Rattled and Shook,
a podcast where we tune into scary stories and discuss our deepest, darkest fears.
But in a fun way. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy day
happy
after Valentine's
V-Day.
Day.
Yeah, yeah. Which is known as... Is
it known?
Boxing V-Day.
Good try.
So I'd like to know, what's your stance... What's your stance on Valentine's Day?
Ugh. I feel about Valentine's Day the same way I feel about New Year's Eve and prom. I think it's hyped up. Mm-hmm. I think everyone gets all excited. They get all dolled up. And usually I feel like you're left kind of empty.
Wow.
Now, okay, that's pretty jaded of me. And I'm an optimistic person usually.
I think we need to talk about your prom experience.
No, my proms are fine. They're fine. They're fine. Yeah, Valentine's Day is okay.
Yeah, I think it's a made-up holiday, basically manufactured by, like, capitalism.
I think April said this about every single holiday we've ever discussed.
Everything is capitalism. And I often forget it's even happening. You know, I'm kind of reminded of it from my girlfriends who are like, do you want to do a Galentine's thing? Because I am chronically single, I guess.
Chronically single. Chronically That's really single. Funny.
I'm not a romantic. It's relationships, Valentine's Day, anything romantic. It's not really my thing.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I'm chronically dating somebody and I don't enjoy Valentine's Day that much. The best Valentine's Day I ever had was with my then boyfriend's parents.
Mm.
We they cooked us dinner and then they gave me an orchid and it was delightful. It was very aromantic.
It makes sense that the best Valentine's Day was provided to you by parents. Your boyfriend's parents.
Yeah, that was the probably my favorite one. And I love romance.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Romance, but romance.
Yeah, you have to put the accent in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd love to turn that around. Let's see.
It's not going to happen this year.
Yeah.
It's just like New Year's. We don't have to make it more than what it is. It's just a day. It's just a day.
Well, I hope that everyone, despite this very jaded conversation, enjoyed their Valentine's Day.
For sure.
And also enjoyed a couple of these stories in this episode that are slightly love-themed. Twisted love. Kind of. And I'll be reading the first one, so here we go. When I was 22, Deadpool came out in theaters. Having nobody to accompany me, I took myself on a date on Valentine's Day to go see it. It was a sold-out show, so inevitably, a stranger slid into the empty seat next to me. I remember his breath reeked of whiskey, but he seemed friendly enough. We chatted a little bit before the movie started, and then I turned my attention to Ryan Reynolds. Obviously. But I guess, in his mind, our interaction wasn't over. During the movie, the guy next to me repeatedly leaned over to whisper to me. It was weird. Then he started to manspread into my legroom until I was forced to basically dangle my body into the aisle. Then he tried several times to hold my hand or put his arm around my shoulder. He even offered to be my Valentine for the night. I swear he tried to lean in to kiss me at one point. I politely but firmly rebuffed him every time he made a weird advance. I thought about leaving, but I was young and I was alone. And a lot of women just feel uncomfortable causing a scene, even when we should. Should I have made a bigger deal? Stormed out and demanded a refund? Maybe. But I honestly wasn't sure anyone was going to take me seriously. Instead, I leaned away from him and tried my best to enjoy the movie I'd been waiting for months to see. After the movie, I got up quickly and tried to blend into the departing crowd. But before I could, I felt a hand wrap around my arm. Whiskey guy was breathing in my face. "Wait, what's your name?" Panicking internally, I yanked my arm back, muttered a fake name, and pushed my way through the line, running straight into the women's bathroom. I hid in the bathroom for about 15 minutes while trying to get somebody on the phone who could come to the theater. Nobody answered because it was like 12:45 a.m. at this point. But eventually, I got hold of my older brother, who lived an hour away, but offered to stay on the phone while I exited the theater. By this time, I figured, this guy has got to be gone. Again, it's been at least 15 minutes at this point. I stepped out of the bathroom into a completely empty lobby. The last showing of the night was over. I walked into the pitch-black parking lot, notorious for having zero streetlights, and attempted to sound casual on the phone as I told my brother all about the movie. Slowly, cautiously, I walked further into the lot, passing a large concrete column to my right. That's when I sensed movement. I whipped around and realized the guy was right there, leaning against the pillar, out of sight from the front door of the theater. He had been hiding in the dark and waiting for me to come out of the building. He made a slight movement, as though he wanted to reach out again, but withdrew when he saw the phone in my hand. I immediately hightailed it to my car, still hearing footsteps following me. My brother asked if he was there. I said yes. With an edge of fear in his voice, my brother asked if he should call 911. But I demanded he not hang up on me. I reached my car, fumbled briefly with the keys, and jammed them into the lock. Only after I slid inside and turned the car on did I dare look back. The man had followed me about halfway to my car, then stopped. He was still standing in the lot, unmoving, staring at me, when I sped away. The whole time my brother was asking, "Is the guy still there? Is the guy still there?" Finally, I was able to confirm that he wasn't still following me. My brother, ever the loving sibling, yawned and said, "Cool, I'm going back to bed." He loves me sometimes, I swear. Lots of people that I've shared this story with say, maybe I should avoid going to late movies alone in the future. But to that, I say,
maybe parents should avoid raising their sons to think it's okay to stalk a woman in a parking lot.
I guess that's every woman who likes to attend the movie theater by themselves. Worst nightmare.
Mm-hmm. And I totally get it. Like, I do understand. I'm definitely like a de-escalation, try not to cause a scene person.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if someone like leaned over to kiss me or put their arm around me, I think I'd be like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Scream.
I don't like Ryan Reynolds that much. I don't like Ryan Reynolds enough to stay.
Yeah. Understandable.
Ryan Gosling, I might have stayed. My preferred Ryan is Gosling.
So I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a fake name that you give out to creeps?
And oh.
Are you comfortable sharing that with us today?
That's a really good idea. I don't have a fake name I give out to creeps. I just fully give them my name. I'm an idiot. I've never thought about that. In fact, I did it like pretty recently where I was like, why did I do that?
Why did I give them my full name and phone number?
Yeah.
And bank account.
Well, I didn't give them bank account yet. Yet. I definitely like, I don't give full name. Like, I try not to give my last name.
Yeah.
But I never really.
You try not to. As hard as, as much as you want to, you will not give out your last name.
It's so tempting. But I just give people my first name.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, people can't really do much with your first name. My name is spelt differently from how it normally is spelled.
You have that to your advantage.
So it's actually not to my advantage. Well, actually, if I was just to speak my name to you, yes, that is to my advantage. But, you know, online, dating apps, profiles, things like
they
that.
They can find you easily.
They can find me very easily if they see the spelling. So in person, yeah, I guess that's to my advantage. But I do have a fake. I've had a fake couple names throughout the years.
What are they?
I'll share one of them because it's so ridiculous. And I just thought, let's have fun with this.
Because it's deactivated now? You don't use that one anymore?
Yeah.
Okay.
Niska?
Niska. Yeah.
Niska.
That's different.
You don't think I look like a Niska?
No, actually, if you told me your name is Niska, I would fully be like, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely like specific enough that I'm like, oh, she's not lying.
You think?
Okay. I think so.
All right. I feel like she's a Russian spy. You know what I mean?
Oh, so you like... You drew up an entire character.
Yes. I have a whole persona attached to this.
That's smart, though. That's good that you have something at the ready.
Mm-hmm.
As paranoid as I am as a person and as careful as I am, I'll just throw my name out there. I'll just, yeah, absolutely. Sure. No, you want to know where I live? Yeah, that's fine.
My place of birth?
Honestly, this is a really good PSA to parents that are thinking about naming their kid something with unusual spelling.
Mm.
They will be found online very easily. Consider that.
Yeah.
Consider your daughter's footprint on dating apps.
Yeah. You want to be all unique and individualistic.
No, you want to be John.
Just makes you more of a target. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to be Emily. You'll never find
Emily. You
want to
be
Emily.
Anne.
That's right.
You want to be Anne the Gremlin.
Callback. I was thinking the same thing. Anne the Gremlin. If you've been here for a long time, you'll remember. You'll remember that episode.
I have a safety tip, I guess, that I've learned with things like this. If you're accosted in a business or a public place, they tell you, go find an employee and ask them to escort you to your car.
Yeah. Well said, Niska. Well said.
Duh.
Good Lord. Oh, would you look at that? It's ad time.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Here's another story.
When I was in the seventh grade, this would have been about 2007, I was best friends with a girl who I will refer to as Kate. There were two other girls in our friend group who I'll call Maddie and Josie. The four of us were definitely not what you'd call popular, but we weren't totally invisible. We pretty much did everything together. Around the middle of April that year, the semester was wrapping up and we were prepping for state testing, so things were dull, to say the least. After lunch, we all had the same fifth period history class, so we would stop at our lockers on the way and walk to class together. One day, there was a folded note wedged in the door of Kate's locker. Assuming it was from another friend, she grabbed it and we continued to class and took our seats. In class, Kate unfolded the note and looked confused. When she showed it to me, it was this drawing of a stick figure person with a heart. And underneath the stick man was a simple, "Hope you're having a great day. Love, Locker Buddy." Kate asked the rest of us if we'd written it, since we sometimes did write notes to each other to pass time, but none of us had. And the handwriting didn't look familiar either, though the messy scrawl suggested it was probably a boy. We decided it was likely just another one of our friends being silly, and we didn't really think of anything beyond that. Next day, Kate found another note. This one had the same handwriting and the same signature, Locker Buddy. This time, the message said something along the lines of, "Guess who has a crush on you?" We decided it must be a secret admirer that was leaving the notes, and our little titillated laughter drew the attention of a few of the other girls in our class. Kate showed them the notes, and before long, most of the class was invested in identifying Locker Buddy. Again, can't stress enough how boring seventh grade was. Even our teacher, Miss Dreyer, thought the whole thing was kind of sweet. Kate received a couple more notes over the next week or so, all pretty innocuous, essentially just talking about how much he was crushing on her. Said stuff like, "I love your smile, your hair is beautiful, I wish I had the courage to ask you out," etc. At this point, our whole class was paying attention. One day, Kate unfolded the latest note, and her expression looked different. I asked what was wrong, but she just shook her head and passed the note to me. Maddie and Josie peered over my shoulder as we all read it. This time it said, "I'm always watching you." The handwriting was the same, but there was no heart, no doodle, not even a signature this time. Kate's face was visibly disturbed, and she just quickly tucked the note away instead of reading it out loud like she normally would. She didn't say much for the rest of the class, but the rest of us just shrugged it off. Like, maybe he didn't mean it in a creepy way. Maybe he thought she'd be flattered by the idea that he watched her at school. Kate eventually seemed to shrug it off as well. The next week, though, things took an abrupt turn. Kate came to class a few minutes after the rest of us, and she looked really upset. She just wordlessly dropped a new note in front of me, and this time when I read it, I felt a chill just run down my spine. This one said, "If you keep ignoring me, I'm going to hurt you." Maddie and Josie were just as shocked as I was, and because we were all surprised, that drew the attention of the rest of the class. Ms. Dreyer read the note over my shoulder and, alarmed, walked with Kate to the main office to report the note to the principal. I didn't see Kate for the rest of that period, but a couple hours later, I was called down to the office to meet with the guidance counselor. I wasn't surprised to see that Kate, Maddie, and Josie were already there. The counselor asked us some questions about the notes. When did they start? Did we have any idea who might have written them? Had we been mean to somebody who might want to play a prank on us? No. We had no idea. We all answered no. The counselor informed us that if any more notes appeared, we should notify the principal immediately. I think they hoped that word would get out that the office was involved and that would scare off the culprit. And at first it seemed like they might be right. Kate didn't get another note for about a week. Then one day, there was a new one stuffed in her locker. But this time it was wrinkled up like it had been written on paper from the trash or something. We opened it right then and there. Essentially, it read, "Tattling on me was a big mistake. I've been watching you and your bitch friends. How about I hurt one of them slowly and make you watch? Maddie is home alone most days, right?" And that one did it. Kate and Maddie were both sent home for the rest of the day with their parents, and the police were called. And one by one, Kate's friends, including myself, Josie, and three or four of the boys we were friends with, were all pulled from class for questioning as possible suspects. We were asked to provide samples of our handwriting from class assignments to compare to the notes, and an officer was stationed near Kate's locker indefinitely. Kate and Maddie were both advised to stay home from school for a few days since the note was being treated as a direct threat. Maddie was in a panic. Her mom worked late a lot of the time, and she was an only child, so she ended up spending the night at Josie's house for a couple of days. Kate's parents weren't letting her out of their sight, and the rest of us were being interrogated by our classmates about what was happening. I remember feeling more scared than I ever had been before. Even at that age, I was all too aware of stories about women being murdered by stalkers. The idea of being watched, even if it was just by some weird classmate, was so invasive and disturbing, I couldn't think about anything else. We were exhausted. About a week after the threatening note was found, Kate hadn't returned to school and she wasn't returning calls or text messages. Maddie was back, though she was still being escorted to classes by the campus security officer. The rest of us were anxiously awaiting news from the cops or the principal, and it finally came one afternoon during the last period of the day. I was once again called to the counselor's office, along with Maddie, Josie, and the other students who had been questioned in the investigation. I walked in expecting the worst. We were all so strained and anxious from the past few weeks that the tension in the room was palpable. The counselor took a deep breath and said, "This morning, Kate came in with her mom and dad and admitted that she was the person writing the notes. She is very regretful and she will face consequences for this. None of you are in any danger. There was never a stalker." We were stunned. For weeks, Kate had spun this twisted story, painted herself as a victim, and watched us all live under a microscope. And now she was confessing that she'd made the whole thing up? Over the next couple of days, more details came out. Kate claimed she had written the first note as kind of a joke in a misguided attempt to capture the attention of a boy in our history class that she had a crush on. And then when everyone became so interested, she kept going and eventually decided to inject more suspense into the situation. When the principal got involved, she panicked. Rather than fess up and admit what she'd done, though, she doubled down and dragged Maddie into the fold, which of course led to more of us being put through the ringer. It wasn't until the police told the principal that they suspected it was a hoax that she finally confessed to avoid being expelled from school. About 2 months after all this, Kate called me. I was furious with her, but I picked up because I wanted answers. She told me that she felt like a nobody, that all the attention she got from the notes was exciting. For once, she didn't feel like she was on the outside looking in, and it felt so great that she just couldn't see it was spinning out of control. After that experience, I am no longer surprised by the things people will do when they're desperate for attention. I guess you just never really know what someone's capable of.
Katie.
Yeah, man. Wow.
I understand.
Mostly, I kind of feel bad for her.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. You don't know what kids are going through, you know? Like, why they pull things like that.
Oh, and kids lying for attention is, like, so common.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did it all the time.
But do tell.
I was a little liar. I mean, put it in the canon of, you know, April being a prankster, I guess.
Yeah, I was talking about this with a friend recently, actually, yeah. Like lies we told when we were younger. And my friend Daniel told me that he's got a Swedish in his family, like that's part of his background. And he like told people that he could speak Swedish and he would just take the words from like one song that he knew and just move them in different places. And people would be like, wow.
Uh-huh.
And then I told him, I was like, well, you know, my parents were doctors. And I told people that like I don't even know. There was like a bug that wasn't moving. This is a crazy story. And I like had a wet wipe and I like touched it with the wet wipe and then it started moving. I think we were in like first grade and my friends were like, oh my God, you healed it. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. I like no medicine. I touched a bug with a wet wipe.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So healing powers, basically.
Yeah. It's, anyway.
In keeping with that, I did try to claim telekinetic powers to my friend.
Wow, that is, you went for an advanced one.
I did. Well, I watched a lot of X-Men. Gotcha. I was super into X-Men. Yeah, I wanted to be basically Jean Grey.
Okay.
But I think this is a better lie. I think this is better. I lied to all of my friends about being a purple belt in karate.
What a small lie.
I think it goes purple, brown, black. And I was like, black belt, way too far. Brown belt, might still not be able to pass that off. Purple, I think I can go with purple. I think I can pull that off.
It's so interesting. Like you're trying to dupe everyone and thinking you're like hyper athletic.
That I'm just above mediocre at karate.
Oh my God.
No, I'm just slightly above average at karate.
But the things you wanted people to believe, like that you had like telekinesis and that you were like a purple belt in karate, they're like superhero things.
Yeah, I wanted to be a superhero because once again, I watched a lot of X-Men. X-Men.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I also told a lie about this one was like a stupider lie where like I knew people didn't believe me. Like they knew that I was like full of shit too, but I was kind of like, prove it. But I tried to have all my dance friends think I had a butler named, I think I named him Chives.
It's kind of like Jeeves. But
exactly.
Chives.
It's like Jeeves. Yeah. I thought it sounded like French or something. So I was like, I have this butler named Chives. And then I think I got to the point where they're like, okay, maybe. I took it like too far. Like, obviously, we didn't have a butler named Chives.
Was Chives like always pulling the car around? He's like,
yeah,
he's
Chives
just
is always out doing errands.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So I totally get it. Like, lying for attention. Yeah. Mm. Especially as a kid, you know?
Yeah. You wanted to feel special in some way. You wanted to feel...
You want to have this, like, reason for everyone to give you attention.
Mm.
Yeah. You break your arm and everyone gives you so much attention.
Yes. Oh, what I would kill to have a cast.
Yeah.
In elementary school, middle school.
You just want to have a secret. You just want to be different, you know?
Yeah.
So funny.
You want a story.
Yeah.
You know, I think I have this scar on my forehead right here. And that was like my biggest claim to fame when I was like 10 years old. Everyone was like, what happened? You got a hole in your head.
Yeah.
Because my sister basically accidentally jumped on my back and my head just bounced off the corner of a table.
Oh.
And now I have this little reminder. And she felt awful. Like she was horrified at what happened. And I was like, hey, man, battle scar. Clout.
Yeah, clout. Gave you some edge. Edged you up a little bit.
Yeah.
Almost makes me believe that you could be a purple belt in karate.
I'm the last of the red hot mamas. They've all cooled down but me. I don't pet and only neck 'em. No, sir, I'm a mama who loves to wreck 'em. I can make 'em sizzle, make 'em fry and frizzle. If you want to know the truth, I can warm the cold ones, give the old ones back their flaming youth. Cause I'm the last of the red hot mamas. I'm getting hotter all the time.
We know what you want. Another ad. Right?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's tune in to another story.
So back in high school, two friends and I go to see a scary movie in theaters. These two friends are my spooky friends, who love all the scary stuff just like me. So we decided to go to a late showing of a movie around 10 p.m. The movie's called You're Next. We get there all excited, get our tickets, get snacks, and then walk to the theater. Theater 10. We take notice that the movie is being shown in the smallest theater, in the far corner of the building, which is kind of creepy. Then, once we get inside, we realize we're the only ones in the theater at all. It stays this way for a duration of the movie. For us, this only adds to the movie experience, which is great. At first. When the movie ends, we walk out, and the entire lobby is empty. No employees, no moviegoers, no one at all. Not a soul in sight. And this was a Friday night. Now we're extra creeped out. We walk pretty fast to the exit and get to the parking lot, and it's also completely empty, except for one other car in the distance of the dark parking lot. At this point, we book it to our car, get in, turn the key, dead. The car is dead. Now we're convinced we're in a scary movie ourselves and we're terrified. It's too real. I mean, we just saw a movie called You're Next. We call a tow truck and sit in the car with the doors locked, just looking out the windows, waiting for something bad to happen. And we can't stop looking over at the dark car across the parking lot. No one ever comes out of the theater. No one looks like they're locking up either. The lights stay on, but there's no activity whatsoever. It feels eerily deserted. Finally, after an hour of us being on edge, the tow truck driver arrives. Everything worked out okay, but man, I'll tell you, I'll never forget the feeling of going from one horror movie straight into a real-life horror movie scenario of my own. You're next. The whole thing was just so weird.
It's so interesting because I like totally relate to the going to the movies late when mm-hmm. you're young and it's like literally the only thing you can do and it feels crazy and wild.
Yeah.
It was a creepy scene. Like I get the empty movie theater, just saw a horror movie, so you're a little bit on edge.
I would be creeped out.
But like I have theories here. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that some kid, I mean, you know who like is mostly working at a movie theater. Usually it's kind of young people.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, the theater worker for sure got high at the end of their shift. That's their car. And they fell asleep. And that's why it didn't get closed up. Mm-hmm. All the lights are on. No one's there. No movement. No one's shutting down the theater. And then there's one car.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a solid theory.
I see why it's creepy, though. It definitely
it's a creepy
creeps
scene.
Me out.
Yeah. The whole empty parking lot at night. One car in the distance.
And I pictured it like an Oldsmobile too. Like it's like an old station wagon.
Yeah.
Looks like it's out of the movie Zodiac kind of car.
Oh, yes.
That's what I pictured.
Some smoked up windows. Maybe he was hotboxing.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he was just in there.
Yeah. Just asleep in the car.
You're right. That's actually a good point. That's a good point.
I go to see movies in the mall nearby a lot of the time. And sometimes you go a little late, you come out and the mall has basically cleared out at that point. You know, it feels off. It feels off to come out of a movie that's super intense into an empty space that was full of people before.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I don't really like empty public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Even lights on, empty like hospital, mall, places that are supposed to be full. There's something inherently creepy about that.
Yep. Because it feels unnatural.
Liminal space.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You feel sure. like you're in an alternate reality.
Like in the back rooms. You know the yes. back rooms, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like that.
I love the your next shout out in this because mm-hmm. it is one of my favorites. And I looked it up and I realized how long ago that movie came out. Now I think it's 2011.
No.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Why?
Wait, I feel like that was yesterday. I remember when it came out.
You're next? Well, it did come on streaming pretty recently. It's on Max now, I think.
Oh my God, it so is maybe, 2011.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? 13 years old.
Wait, that's not the movie I was thinking of.
Oh.
Wait, what's the one that has Adam Brody? And they're all-
Oh, Ready or Not? That's Ready another not. One of my favorites. Another woman kicking ass.
I was thinking about Ready or Not. They yeah. have similar names to me for some reason.
Mm. Definitely a similar vibe and genre.
Mm-hmm. Female forward slasher-ish revenge type movie with an insular cast.
Yes. Very well said.
Really well said for not seeing either one of them.
You should watch both of them.
I think I'd really like, at the very least, the Adam Brody one.
Yes. Great stuff. Great
Which
cast.
Which is, to clarify, Ready or Not.
Yeah.
I've not seen the movie Ready or Not.
I think
People
it's
love that movie, though. Kind of like,
fun
like
as
a
hell.
Fun movie. Yeah.
Yeah. When I first saw Your Next, I was pretty young. I was kind of still in like very entrenched in like church and Christian circles. And I was like hanging out with a couple of girls and one of them mentioned Your Next and I had just seen it actually pretty recently. And I was like, oh, I love that movie. And she was like, what? That movie is disgusting, April. That's disgusting.
You were shamed.
I was so shamed.
Because like it wasn't godly?
Yeah, it's, you know. It's exactly what you just said.
I mean,
said.
It's a horror movie. Because, it's a slasher.
Yeah, it's a horror movie slasher.
Wow. She shamed you and then were you friends?
We remained in contact for a bit. We didn't remain friends for too long. She was fine. Nothing against her. I think that movie's not everyone's bag. You know, it's very much, you have to be okay with very, very dark humor and violence. But I found it
perhaps not a hyper-Christian person's bag.
Right.
Perhaps, you know, yeah. Especially. Well, I'm sorry you're ashamed. I'm sorry you're ashamed, and you shouldn't have been shamed for the things that you like.
Thank you. It did make me shut up about horror around people for a few years.
Oh, God. Well, now you're talking about it to, like, the abyss, so anyone can hear it. I think you've recovered.
Came back with a vengeance.
Unstoppable.
Yeah.
On a podcast.
I am not broken.
That's great.
Rattled and Shook is a Tenderfoot TV production in partnership with Odyssey. Executive producers are Donald Albright and Payne Lindsay. Co-executive producer is Meredith Stedman. Hosted and produced by April Ruha and Meredith Stedman. Lead editor and sound designer is April Ruha. Additional production by Sean Nerney. Production management by Tracy Kaplan and Jordan Foxworthy. Original score by Makeup and Vanity Set. Original art by Puppy Teeth. Follow us on social media at Rattled and Shook. I'm